Blog Talk Radio.
Have you ever wondered why it's happening again?
Welcome to Mind Shifters Radio with your co-host, the Forgiveness Doctor, Dr. Michael Rice, and his wife, Jeannie. Michael and Jeannie share with you the wisdom of the ancient Aramaic internal process of forgiveness. They offer tools and support 5 days a week. They will support you in building a solid foundation within yourself to live in pure love. In Aramaic, Rachma. Michael is the author of Why Is This Happening to Me Again? For more information on Michael and Jeannie, please visit www.whyagain.com. And now your co-host, the Forgiveness Doctor, Dr. Michael and Jeannie Rice.
To the brightness within you and the truth that is rooted within me.
Happy Wednesday. Today is February 4th, 2015. I'm Michelle Pache, filling in for Jeannie, and I'm here today with Dr. Tim Hayes. We warmly welcome you to the show and thank you for choosing to be with us. Our call-in number is 646-200-4169. Press 1, and that puts you into queue to talk with our host. We encourage you to call in with your comments or questions, allowing you to actively strengthen and deepen your practice. So now, let's welcome Tim in the process of learning and experiencing Aramaic forgiveness.
Thank you, Michelle. How are you today?
I'm great. I'm lovely.
All right. Well, glad to hear that. And again, I would like to echo your comments and thank everyone who chooses to tune in and spend their valuable time and share this time with us where we're doing what we can to teach and support others in learning and then using these wonderful tools. And the brief intro, and then we'll get in. I'm hoping we're going to have some people calling who have been involved in the support groups, because I know there's more than one support group that meets on a Tuesday, and we had our group last night. But the support groups are about the same thing this radio show is about, is teaching the ancient Aramaic tool of forgiveness and several corollary supporting tools that Dr. Michael and Jeannie Rice make available on the website at www.whyagain.org. And if you go to that page and click on the link that says Start Here or the red and white bullseye, they make available completely free of charge everything you would need to learn, practice, get support in learning more deeply. One of the most powerful tools I've learned for improving the quality of my life. And that includes everything I've learned in graduate school psychology and many, many years of postgraduate training and, you know, yearly seminars to learn this new trick and that new trick and this new therapy model. And what's available free on this website is one of the most powerful tools by far that I've encountered anywhere in my experience. And the tool is sometimes people say this is ridiculously simple. It's an 8.5 by 11 sheet of paper that you can print as many copies as you want and use endlessly. And by simply reading the words on the page and filling in the blanks, I can educate myself about a new way to approach the decades of conditioning I've had about where my internal pain and sadness and fear and hurt comes from. And then release, identify the goals I have, release those goals, ask for help to see more clearly the part of my mind that's actually creating my pain and fear and sadness. And then through the process, I'm not just canceling a goal, relieving a pressure, and feeling better. Every time I do a worksheet, I'm literally peeling away at the old conditioning, which falsely taught me that people and things outside of me were responsible for what I was feeling inside of me. So every time I read the worksheet and put the pen to the paper, I quite literally peel off another layer of conditioning. And if I'm willing to do this many, many times, and whenever my internal alarm goes off, and again in this work, my internal alarm letting me know something's wrong is any kind of fear, pain, sadness, muscle tension, ache, any upset, any guilt or shame. And traditionally in the culture I was raised in, I was taught that when that alarm goes off inside of me, it means I need to go outside of myself and figure out who outside of me needs to change or be punished for causing the pain I'm feeling. And the revelation in this work is that it's an alarm system, right? If I'm feeling sadness or fear or pain, it is an alarm telling me something's wrong. However, it's telling me that something is wrong inside of me, exactly where I'm feeling the pain. That's where the problem lies. So with the application of a tool that actually has me focused into me, into my thoughts, my feelings, my energy system, my genetic and energetic history from my parents, my patterns of belief, and my repetitive behaviors, I have access to the actual source of my pain, and then I can choose whether to hold on to it or release it. And I can choose whether or not to focus on my true nature as the energy of love, the energy of creation trying to express through me. And when I do, I get a whole different feeling than when I focus on something outside of me and I think that person or this situation is wrong and needs to change before I can feel better. So that's the core of our work. There are a variety of tools on there, on that page, if you scroll down farther, that will supplement this work and help you, help me, help others identify the hidden parts of their minds that are causing their pain. But the core tool is the reality management worksheet. And if you are one of the people on the call or in the chat room who has participated in a support group ever, or in the past week, or even last night, feel free to raise your hand, press 1. It's area code 646-200-4169. And if you press 1, Michelle will see that your hand is up, know that you have a question, and we'd love to hear feedback about how the support groups are going, how they're working for you. Last night in our support group, we watched the hour-long presentation by Yayam, who is the gentleman who channeled or brought forth the Way of Mastery. And he has a DVD that he sells that lays out a poetic, an artistic, a practical interpretation of the ancient scripture of the Beatitudes. We've had Dale Allen Hoffman on this show, and he is an Aramaic scholar, and he works with translations. And Dale helps us figure out word for word what an ancient Aramaic word might mean or what a phrase might mean if they're put together. And it's very powerful to study the source material because we begin to realize that a single sound in the ancient Aramaic takes sentences or paragraphs to explain in English. And a word may take several paragraphs to explain in English. So if you have a phrase or a sentence that years later, generations later, cultures later, in a different language later, someone translates as, "Blessed are the poor in spirit." If you go back to the ancient Aramaic and you look at the sounds and the words and the phrases that were put together, you will not come away with something so simple, something so pedantic, and something so contradictory to the teachings of one who taught spirituality is the key and focusing on the physical is the error. And you would get something like we listened to this hour-long lecture last night where instead of blessed are the poor in spirit, for they shall inherit the earth, Yayim offers the interpretation of that from the ancient Aramaic as the following. Now is the ripe time to make your home in the breathing unity. The fertile soil of the queendom shall birth your clear guidance. What does that mean? That means any time I'm feeling less than love, fear, sadness, anger, tension, physical pain, now in that moment when I become aware that I'm not connecting my conscious awareness to my true nature, now is the time for me to breathe, turn my awareness to my breath, realize in a very real sense I am being breathed. I'm not breathing. There is a force, there is a life force, there is an energy that keeps my breath moving even when I'm distracted during the day, even when I'm sound asleep at night, even if some trauma happens and I'm knocked unconscious, my breath keeps moving. There is an energy breathing me, and if I focus on that and I allow the conscious logical mind and all of its conclusions to just float unattached without pouring energy into them, then a deeper level of wisdom and intelligence will give me guidance. That's just the first beatitude, and Yayim talks about it for maybe 5 minutes, expanding the concepts, talking about each individual word, giving his intuitive and artistic interpretation. And it's a very powerful lecture that begins to introduce us to a practice, which you might consider like a breathing practice or the worksheet practice or a yoga practice or a stretching discipline or a kung fu practice. The Beatitudes, at least the first three or four, are literally describing Yeshua's recommendation. Yeshua, the one that most people today know as Jesus, in the ancient Aramaic his name was Yeshua, or something close to that. And if we breathe every time there's an upset, and we focus on the breath, and we allow the pain to rise within us, and we feel it, but stay focused on the breath, instead of focusing on how can I get rid of this pain and who or what outside of me needs to change, but I focus internally and I allow the pain to come up and I keep moving the breath and I allow my breath then to soften what's tight or rigid within me, and then I keep breathing and I get access to a level of insight that goes far beyond what my conscious logical mind and the conditioning of my culture could offer. This is the beginning of a liberty that goes beyond words. This is the beginning of stepping through that doorway that Christ said, or Jesus said, I have flung a door wide open and it cannot be closed. This is the beginning of us stepping into that door. If we realize that every time there's a discomfort, every time there's a pain, a fear, a sadness, a hurt, every time there's a rage or a feeling of condemnation or a judgment of myself or someone else, the thing to do is breathe. The thing to do is recognize that now, in this moment, is the ripe time. It's the perfect time to make my home in the breathing unity. And my interpretation for that is that I focus on an awareness that says the energy that's breathing me and my conscious awareness are unified in a way that my conscious mind can't, my logical mind can't understand. But it's so connected that my breath keeps moving even when I'm asleep. And I introduce myself to the awareness that I'm being lived, I'm being breathed through, that I'm really not the one driving the boat. And if I do that and I allow the pain and the fear and the sadness and the errant conclusions to rise within me, and I deepen my practice of again in this moment returning to my breath and allowing the force of life and creation that keeps me breathing even when I'm asleep to answer the situation, and I put my conscious logical mind out to pasture for a while, I don't need to worry about it. I can have my conscious logical mind back anytime I want to figure out what clothes I should wear and how I should drive to work and how to turn my computer on. But when it comes to the mental and the emotional and the spiritual realm, my conscious logical mind has missed the mark. It has created an illusion that I am separate or separated from everyone or everything, including my Creator. And it has created a world of illusion that it wants me to live in. And the fear that it creates when it creates the illusion that I'm separate from everyone and everything else, it wants me to listen to that fear, to let the fear tell me what to do to get out of this situation. And it never happens. If I listen to my fear and the part of my mind that is fearful, it will only, always, and ever tell me what to do so that fear can rule my mind for another day. And if I breathe and I focus on the unity of the energy that's breathing through me and that gave rise to me in creation, and the body that I seem to be inhabiting and the energy fields and nested energy fields within nested energy fields that are my conscious awareness, that arise from my conscious awareness, I will be introduced to a level of understanding and a level of transformation that my conscious logical mind and my ego can never achieve. So it was a powerful hour. And then we had some discussion, and then we offered the possibility of a reality management worksheet, and we had a member who's been there quite often for a long time, consistently, and she said, I really need some help. I've done a lot of worksheets. I've done a lot of different kinds of tapping, and I'm very stuck. And there's something I really want to work on, and I'd like to do that faster EFT tapping. And so we spent the better part of 50 minutes doing round after round of faster EFT tapping, which bounced us from tears and sobbing and crying and memories of pain to laughter, to release, to more tears and more pain and more memories being active and releasing that and more laughter. And as we were done, we were laughing, and the person felt just tremendously different than she had when we started. The person sitting next to her said, I just want to let you know that as I sat here, I just kept thinking about how strong you are, and I wanted to tell you, you're so strong and you've done so well. And I told the person who was making that comment that the truth is his mind is trying to get him to understand how strong he is. And every time he had the urge to tell this other person how strong she was, because she was remembering a trauma when she was 5 years old and remembering many other traumas from childhood, and he wanted to tell her, he had the urge to tell her, she's so strong and she's going to make it. And I told him, it's his unconscious that's trying to get him to understand how strong he is. Because at a conscious level, he's clearly not feeling and recognizing his strength and his bravery. And of course, that was very confusing to him, and that led to another 15 or 20 minutes of discussion in the group. And of course, we're never alone when we have an issue or a problem or a question. And so there were other people in the room who had difficulty trying to understand, what do you mean? His mind is trying to tell him how strong he is. he's feeling this other person's strength and he just wants to comment on it. Why won't you just let him comment on it? And I made the point that I've led these groups long enough and I've worked with people long enough to see it time and time and time again. If there had been a person sitting next to the person who did all of the processing last night, who in their core felt weak and fragile and scared, they would have felt threatened by the process. And they might even have tried to stop me from doing the process and guiding this person to their traumas. And at the very least, they would have felt shaken, they would have felt inadequate, and they would have felt like they wanted to move away from that level and intensity of processing. It's all an inside job. So the person who sat next to the one who did all the processing and cried and sobbed and felt all this pain and paralysis and then moved into laughter and then moved back into pain, the person who sat next to that and wanted to tell her she was strong and courageous has an unconscious mind that's trying to get him to recognize how strong and courageous he is. And one of the ways, one of the tools we use in this, one of the tools that's available on the worksheet, on the website, is a worksheet called the Codependence to Interdependence Worksheet. And the essence of the Codependence to Interdependence Worksheet, I sum it up this way. I will never feel upset or enlivened and exalted by anything anybody else ever says or does, unless I am still either judging myself negatively for having done the same or similar thing, or it's resonating the same level of pride, strength, or exaltation within me. And the Codependence Interdependence Worksheet is available on the website, and it has me list everybody I think has ever offended me in my entire life, and then it has me list what they did that I think was offensive. And it has me list my punishment thought for them, what I'd like to do to get back at them or hurt them or set them right. And then it has me list my advice to them. Because, of course, if they offended me, I know I'm right and they're wrong and it's settled. We shouldn't be arguing. And then the last column on that worksheet is I make a column, and at the top of the column I put, here's how I'm going to apply my advice to this other person who did this horrible thing to me, how I'm going to apply my advice to them in my life. So the tool I can use in the moment all day, every day is, I can learn to monitor my thoughts and my words, and if I ever hear myself giving anybody any advice about anything, part of my mind can notice this is something my mind is trying to tell me that I need to do. And people are shocked when I say this, but even in my work as a licensed clinical psychologist, in a session, if I hear myself giving advice, there's a part of my mind on my good days that's trying to nudge me and wake me up and say, hey, Tim, you need to do this in your life. And one of the prime examples that happened a while back, I found myself saying to somebody, a patient in my office, almost exactly these words. I found myself saying to him, you need to commit to setting aside more quality time with the primary relationships in your life. And I knew in that moment when it came out of my mouth that way, that I needed to start asking myself, okay, Tim, where do you need to spend more quality time and commit to this? Is it with your mother? Is it with your sons? Is it with your co-partner at work? And I began to think about it in that moment. And after the session, I made some notes about how I must need to spend more quality time, to focus and make a commitment to spend quality time with the primary relationships in my life. And I knew it to be true because it came out of my mouth that way. Now, if it had come out of my mouth as a question to this person, if I had said, well, how do you suppose it would feel if you made a commitment to do some of that? That may not be advice to myself. That might be helping this person explore their resistance to a good idea. And just because it was the perfect advice for me, it could also be, it's not exclusive, very good advice for the other person. So we went through this process and tried to describe to people in the room last night how if I feel attracted to another person, it's only because the qualities I'm seeing that person display, act out, demonstrate in front of me are qualities I possess, but I'm hiding from myself. If I feel this person is so smart, and this person is so handsome, and this person is so beautiful, and this person is so creative, and this person is so spiritual, and I want to spend more time with them because of any of those characteristics, what's happening in that moment is they're demonstration of that characteristic, of that energy, of that quality, is resonating within me the very same quality. If it wasn't in me and resonated at that time, I couldn't appreciate it in somebody else. And if I don't instantly recognize the kindred spirits and us as equals, it means I'm hiding from myself those very qualities and characteristics in myself. This, I would offer for your observation, is universally true in every situation. If you've listened to this radio show from time to time, and you've heard Dr. Rice talk about something, and you've heard him talk about the essence of love and the need to do the tool of forgiveness with everything that's less than love in you, if you've heard him talk about any level of this work, and you've been impressed and thought, oh my gosh, this guy is so smart. He's really there. This guy is so spiritual. These tools are so powerful. What's happening in that moment is there's a part of you that you're not consciously aware of that is exactly as smart, exactly as spiritual, exactly as loving as the person you're listening to. And the liberty that comes from recognizing that truth and answering, bringing up the questions that might come from this and observing them for yourself is what takes us into that doorway that Yeshua flung wide open that cannot be closed. It's the liberty that has us seeing accurately that we are connected to everyone and that we are only one and that all there is the energy of creation which is trying to express through us. So I'll take a breath and I'll ask Michelle if we have any questions or comments or anybody else who's been at a support group recently that would like to talk about that experience. 646-200-4169. Press 1, and Michelle will know that you have a question.
So, yeah, that was a lot of information. That's definitely one to replay and get all the nuances. You shared a lot there, Tim.
So what did it stir up for you? Because
well,
it sounded like you had a big breath there, and there's some energy moving for you around that.
Well, the one thing that I thought was interesting, I noticed myself when you were saying about the woman felt stuck, and I became aware of that on my way to work today. I went out to water my chickens, and one had apparently decided to stick its head through the back of a sliding door. He pushed his head all the way out, but he couldn't bring his skull back in, or she, excuse me, these are laying hens. So I had to dig through the snow and pull out the boards and open the door and free the chicken, and nothing's ever happened like that in 10 years of keeping chickens. I thought it was unusual. Like, maybe wanted to peck the snow out there. I don't know. 10 minutes later, I'm driving to work, or driving down my driveway, and I slide off my driveway into a ditch on the side, and there I am, stuck. And so I get the shovel, and I peel out, and da-da-da-da. And then I had to address a letter that I got from the insurance company because there was a check outstanding, and they wanted me to call to make some arrangements. And I call during business hours, but apparently they're on Central Standard Time. And so, again, I'm noticing in within a half an hour these three major sticking points showing me I'm stuck, which is too obvious to ignore. And so I thought about the concept of doing the work without knowing what your issue is, just recognizing there's a pattern, because it's obviously one that my unconscious is trying to alert me to, but I haven't got a clue, other than I'm noticing the pattern.
Well, that's the first can't fix a problem I don't know I have, so congratulations for having your eyes open and seeing something important to address, breathe through. I mean, it's, if you go back to the Beatitudes, the most important part of that is breathe.
Well, I will like to share that piece of it because I already called my office to let my first appointment know I was late because of the stuck chicken. So then when my car slid off and I had to get the shovel and dig out, and this is snow to my knees, like 4 feet deep where I'm trying to walk and shovel, and I recognized it was so, like, in my head this other default says, okay, so you're late already. You can get out of this, but if you don't engage RACMA, then you might have to call the tow truck, is what I told myself. So when I got the shovel and I was walking back down in the car, I just, like, RACMA, CUBA, engage. RACMA and CUBA, engage. And really consciously, purposely had an intention of, I'm going to go and get this car out of this ditch by myself with all the snow on an icy driveway. And the only hope I have of getting to work on time is with RACMA present. And then just sort of let it go and went to focus on my work. And less than 10 minutes later, I was back on track and out. And I was feeling pretty pretty successful that I remembered in that, like, very, very trying moment to use what I know. And, you know, the habit piece of it is evident that only came after practice, practice, practice.
Well, that sounds like right in line with what we're hoping people begin to do, and then, just as you did, call in and let us know how it's working or not working for you. And the only thing that popped into my mind as you were talking about that was that as you were driving to work and holding on to the idea, I want to get here on time, you might want to, in the same moment you're engaging RACMA and CUBA, just casually cancel that goal to get there on time and notice how you're perception shifts as you release a goal that isn't getting met. It's one of the cores in this work. Guy Finley talks about how whenever I'm angry, tight, tense, worried that I'm not going to get anywhere sometime or where I want to go sometime, it literally shrinks the picture that I'm looking at. It literally constricts my view, my field of view. And most of us have had experiences that we can tap into that where that's clearly the case. And he says, don't you want the big picture? Don't you want to see all the options? And I was working with somebody this morning who has done several releases, worksheets and tapping releases, and she had two major events in the past few weeks that have come to her mind from when she was younger. And she's in her late 50s now, and both of these events, when they happened, were things that if you'd asked her about this 2 years ago, she would have said it was one of the worst, it was one of the most horrible things, it led to some of the most terrible things in my life. And within the past 2 weeks, from doing release work and worksheets and tapping, she has come to see the bigger picture for the first time in one case, 30 years, and in the other case, 25 years. But every time in the past when she looked at this situation, all she could see was the pain and the injustice and the frustration and the negative events that flowed from that instance. And here we are, 25 and 30 years later, and the only thing that's changed, history hasn't changed, the only thing that's changed is when she did canceling the goals, asking to be shown the hidden part of her mind, releasing the painful energies around it, making her breath a focus of her awareness, allowing her breath to soothe and soften, and doing some simple tapping. And she was revealing she doesn't even tap on her body. She just lays in bed and visualizes her hand tapping on her face and body. And in just 2 weeks, 25 and 30 years of anger and resentment and frustration, and this very narrow focus on these two incidents which happened, which by her judgment never should have happened, and led to these horrible things, and started a whole sequence of negative events in her life. Now she is seeing that her life today, the things she loves, the things she has passion for, her enjoyment of her life, and many other good things that happened in the past 25 or 30 years are directly related to those two events happening. And she never saw the big picture. She never made the connection until she canceled the goal, allowed herself to go back through the pain, realize it was only energy, and that she was activating the memory of pain over and over again and fooling herself into believing that she was in the real pain from the original event, rather than allowing herself to soften with the breath, allowing herself to cancel the goal, allowing herself to see the bigger picture. And when she did, she stepped through that door that Yeshua said he opened. He flung it open wide. And she's experiencing more of her life in a more joyful, expansive way. And she's seeing the big picture. How, yes, at the time, that was upsetting, and that led to some negative things. And if that hadn't happened, she wouldn't have all the things in her life that she has now. So, thank you for stimulating that line of thought. Comments, questions?
No, I've got some clinical examples from my caseload too, where some things are moving quicker and quicker, and we spent our evening yesterday in our Mindshifter support group watching Robert Smith's EFT videos, and I introduced one to a woman today, and I'm so excited for her that, you know, she's been 30 years, something that happened when she was 12, and I can see all the threads connecting to her current day problems, and it's just thrilling to watch this process unfold for her. And it's, you know, I don't know about you, but I always see the resonance of the people that sit in my chairs and, you know, and what they reflect for me. And so I'm just really excited to learn about that, the tapping in a more deep way. So Rex is on the phone, and actually I'm sure he'll help share about our group tonight.
Hi, Tim.
For last
Hi,
night. Sorry, tonight.
Hi.
Hello.
Hi, Rex.
I thought it might be helpful because we're tossing around some terms that not everybody, if there's anybody new to the program, it might be a good moment to review what Rachma Kuva are and the filters that were brought up, and then maybe even touch on the forgiveness, I thought maybe. And then I have something I'd like to share, or it's a suggestion, and what do you think?
Okay, well, the Rachma and Kuva filters that Michelle is referring to are things we've talked about a lot in the past week. For more detailed explanation, please go back in this past week, and you'll find quite a bit of extensive discussion about them. But the short version is that there's a filter in the brain over the frontal lobes for intention that can either be set to fear, hostility, or in ancient Aramaic, they had a word for another condition, and that was rachma. And in the back of your brain over perception, there's another filter that can be set to fear, hostility, or the Aramaic word kuba. And when I have rachma and kuba both set in my mind, which is simply a matter of an intention, there's no mechanical process that has to happen. If I intend to set these two filters, the filter over intentions called rachma allows only intentions keyed to love to be used as the building blocks for my goals. And since a goal and holding a goal is the only thing that ever motivates me to do any behavior, if I have rachma set, I can only do loving behaviors. And the filter kuba over perception is a similar resonance that allows me to perceive only the loving aspects of the world in front of me. So I might have someone in front of me who is of like mind with Christ, who is part of the energy of creation, who is the extension of love and form, and they may be displaying behaviors like rage or sadness or fear. And if I have kuba set, it will allow me to perceive them as like energy, creative energy, the true nature of love that they are. And in the ancient Aramaic, it comes down to us through the King James Bible that says, perfect love casts out fear. And in the ancient Aramaic, perfect love was defined as having rachma and kuba set in the mind. And if I have a filter in my mind over intentions that allows only intentions keyed to love, and a filter in my mind over perceptions that allows only perceptions of the loving aspects of creation, I have love in my mind. And I cannot have both love and fear in my mind at the same time. So that's a short
Wonderful, Tim.
Version. Pardon me?
Wonderful. Excellent explanation.
And what would you like to share, Rex? How can we support you?
Well, yesterday you were talking about the process of understanding and how that was engaged with Julie and with Sonny, and it was in the conversation of, you know, that whole piece on understanding. And I have a client that sent me a text one day and said, you know, I'm so excited, I finally heard it. And I had been working with them for quite a while, and in their text they were just elated because the day before we'd had a conversation, and again I reviewed the idea of canceling our goal to understand so that true comprehension, so true awareness can come into our minds. Because as long as I'm in the mode of trying to understand, it's generally like you talked about, Tim, so much yesterday, is about using it as a drug. It's so many different levels of potential denial.
Okay,
and,
so Rex, when you're saying understand, if people go back to the conversation yesterday, the phrase we were using was trying to figure it out. And that's what
okay.
you mean by understanding, right?
Thank you. Yes, correct. Exactly.
Okay.
Yes, and thank you for clarifying that. That is how the words were used yesterday. And so it's trying to understand or figure it out. And as long as I'm trying to figure it out, I'm generally using something to avoid, I'm using the idea of trying to figure it out to avoid what's really happening inside me. And I think it's one of the most powerful forgiveness exercises to cancel my goal to understand and or to figure it out. And so it was a great conversation. And then when you brought up the thing about competition, wasn't it competition?
Yes, competition versus cooperation.
Amazing. It's awesome. Great, great conversation, because what my experience has been, as long as I am trying to beat someone or even beat myself over how I did it before in a way of getting, it's not an easy thing to share, but let me see. It might be easy. Someone has to win in that mode and someone has to lose. And that's the difference in my mind. It falls into the category of right and wrong, got to win, got to lose, rather than everybody can win. And that's what cooperation elicits. And I, being raised in a very competitive world with wrestling and all my, you know, in school and all the things, and then watching what appeared to be a fiercely competitive system at the University of Michigan, and they seem to turn the competition with the students on each other in their experiences of getting and beating other students to the extent that a student may not even tell a friend, you know, something that would help them get a better answer, because they know that there's going to be a certain number of students that don't make it because they were in the bottom of the, scholastic percentages, and they won't graduate. And it's really fiercely competitive. I think that's potentially very destructive. It puts and creates a system of high-level stress, inner stress, to a young person that's already very stressed. So I think in our society, I love watching football and so forth. So I do my best to use it in a way that's to try to make it something different. And the word try, because I can't. I love the athleticism of it, but I still find myself getting caught up in that, so then I still have my content that I have an opportunity to forgive. So that was just some of the things that were resonating with me yesterday.
Before we run out of time, was the sharing you'd like to do about the group?
Well, and that's where I was going right now. So the group last night, Tim, you, about 3 weeks ago, you had asked me or suggested I look into the Faster EFT. I was dealing with some pretty emotional stuff. It was very hot. I'd been doing a lot of forgiveness. And you mentioned it. And ever since I used that first day, it was such a dramatic, it had such a dramatic impact on my experience that I really started adventuring into it. And I've been really spending a lot of time looking at his videos, tapping mostly, just tapping any number of different things, from low back pain, from, you know, just he's got 850 different videos. So I've been pretty excited about it. And then you had shared that you'd offered it to the group, and the group seemed to like it, and we're adding that as another tool. So I brought it up to Tony, and Tony said, absolutely, I'd love to do that. So we planned that last week. And then the other group members that were there said, yes, we'd love to look at a video, you know. And so we looked at two or three videos, had a conversation about the tapping and some of the principles of it and how it's so different than many of the traditional ideas that there's something wrong in the body versus let's just interrupt the mental signal or the mind signal, the thought signal that we're sending to our body that's a perfect creation in our body. And so we were talking about that, and we brought that up. And then we had one of the things that I think is also a wonderful reminder, Tim, and it was excellent. So reminding me, and I do this quite regularly, but it's evidently important to hear it again, that the part about when I want to give advice, it's a good idea for me to ask first is this an advice I just want for myself? And is it necessary to give it outwardly? Is this really for them or is this for me? And that's a great reference. And the other way you ask the question is, if I'm going to say a praise for someone, is that really something I want to hear for myself, that I'd like to hear for myself, that I feel lacking in? And then go in and remove that material and forgive that. So it's great information. So in the group...
Well, Rex, let me just clarify that I didn't say that I scan things before I say them to figure it out. I just use the knowledge that if I'm talking about something in that format of advice, it is advice I need to take. Probably good for both of us. So I don't screen myself before saying those things, but I'm monitoring, and if I find that it comes out of my mouth in the format of advice, I'm assuming it's a really good thing for them to hear, and it's the perfect thing for me to hear.
Cool. And we might do that a little differently, but I heard you describing the same thing, even though you were interjecting that I was saying it differently. But that's, I wasn't in the process of trying to figure it out. I'm actually doing the observing, and sometimes that observing happens before my mouth opens. So it sounds the same to me, but it may sound different. It sounds like it sounds different. So it was an experience I was having of observing myself in the process of saying, hey, you know, if I'm sitting waiting and I'm on the call and I've got my hand up and I want to praise how amazing Tim is, I'm going to from now on look at it and go, Rex, are you really just wanting to say how amazing you are? And then I'll go, good.
And my point is you can do both.
I do
both. And anytime you're praising me or anybody else, it's only because you're recognizing the energy within yourself. And you might be denying it in yourself.
Agreed.
Or you might be just comfortably recognizing yourself in the other person. But if it feels as though you have to tell them how good they are, and you have a pressure about wanting to tell them how good they are.
Yes.
Whenever I recognize that in myself, I realize that I'm denying how that's resonated the very same qualities within me. And I am better served when I just recognize, oh, wow, I have to be at a certain level of vibration to even be able to recognize that in this other person.
Total agreement. And so what we did is, moving ahead, we had in our group, what we did is we did watch some videos, and Michelle had found one. We were searching for one of the beginner ones, so I didn't bring my notepad with me. But we did find some good videos and watch some of the things that he had shared about the beginning stages. And a couple questions came up. It ended up being really, I thought, really powerful. We ended up doing some tapping together as a group by our group's decision. And we watched a video of a vet having gone through a battle situation, which was very descriptive. And he said it was incredibly traumatic for him and had set in motion massive shifts in his entire life ever since that moment happened. And he was describing how he removed it in a very short period of time with this fast EFT tapping. He was a testimonial. Well, in the process, we have one of our participants is also a vet that's had a lot of problems and has shared some of those problems with us to support healing. And when we were watching this, Tony mentioned, well, maybe he said, why don't you pause the video? And we did. And he said, so-and-so, do you have anything moving for you right now? And it was a great suggestion. And he said, well, yeah, I do. And Tony said, well, if you're open to it, maybe Rex would support you in tapping. Because right now, at this level, I'm the most experienced person in the tapping process in our group. And so he suggested, and I said, sure, I'm willing to. You want to do that, sir, you know, rather than saying his name? And he said, yes. So we pursued some tapping. And the beauty of it is, it was awesome to see him move through that and remove some of that intense energy he was feeling and feel better. And then a phrase came up out of his mouth, and he said, well, I'll just have to do this alone to really get it done or to get into it. And it was such a poignant statement, it caught my attention. So I said, well, why don't we consider tapping that, that you have to do it alone. And it's what I've noticed about the tapping, as is the forgiveness. You have the Hydra effect. And it started opening up another piece for him. And so we tapped that out, and then he came to a place of peace. So I thought it was a very powerful group, and I think I talked with Michelle. She appeared to really appreciate it, and the input we got from those we've shared with seemed to really enjoy the group. So anyone that's engaging in thinking about doing a group or is desiring to do a group, please, you know, find a person close to you that might be willing to share it with you, or, you know, just start it, and it's amazing what can happen. And I also wanted to bring up, while we still have a few more minutes, Jim, a conversation that we had about the tapping in relationship to forgiveness and the forgiveness process that Michael teaches and all the work that Michael does. And the question posed was, well, what are we going to do? Just toss out the forgiveness sheet now? And Tony's and my response both were, absolutely not. They work synergistically. It's just adding another tool to the arsenal. It's bringing up more opportunities to use different tools for different purposes. And Tony even shared about, you know, if you have a hammer, it's great for pounding a nail, but it's lousy for screwing in a screwdriver. And in different moments, and I think in a conversation you and I had, Tim, you had mentioned that how the tapping works really beautiful while you're doing the forgiveness. In your group, you were doing some worksheets and you started noticing people tapping while they were doing their worksheet. And what I've been seeing is the worksheet process seems to be very, very much in harmony with the tapping process. They're very similar in what they're doing in our psyche. And I'm really excited about how they are integrated so beautifully, and I wondered if you'd comment on that for you and what your perception is, so that people understand that even though we're spending some time talking about tapping, the core of this work that we're doing is forgiveness and the Aramaic understanding of forgiveness, and then the tapping is something we're doing as an added piece.
Those All right, well, my comment on that would be that's probably a fear-based statement or question, and it would seem to me similar to saying, well, why do you tell us about the codependence to interdependence worksheet? Isn't the reality management worksheet enough? And why do you talk about the three earliest memories of forgiveness or of conflict? Isn't the worksheet enough? So right in line with what you're saying, it's just another tool in the toolkit. And if I'm allowing myself to use the tools that seem appropriate at the time, you know, my father was very, very fond of saying, always try to find the right tool for the right job, for the job. If I'm trying to use a Phillips head screwdriver on a standard screw head, it's not going to go well. And I might end up cutting a 2x4 with a hacksaw, but it's nowhere near as effective and efficient as if I use a wood saw. So that would be my short answer. We're down to just over a minute left in the show. Thank you for sharing, Rex, and thank you, Michelle, for your input. And here we are on Wednesday. We've got two more days of this week, and then 5 days a week, moving on into the future. Please bring somebody back who hasn't been exposed to this work. Come back tomorrow or the next day with your questions or comments. And in the meantime, have the best year yet of your eternal life. Thanks.
Thank you for listening to Mind Shifters Radio with the Forgiveness Doctor, Dr. Michael Rice, and his wife, Jeannie, who present the internal Aramaic process of forgiveness. Michael and Jeannie are here every Monday through Friday on Earth Angels Radio. For more on Michael and Jeannie, please visit www.whyagain.com. That's www.whyagain.com. Evolving continuously. you for listening to